You're listening to SBS News.
The Varka is the name used by Pacific Islanders to refer to the traditional sailing vessels used to discover, explore and navigate their islands. It symbolises a journey. For 26-year-old Fiji-born Vishal Prasad, that has added meaning. On board a Varka that travelled from the Pacific Islands to New York, he and other youth campaigners sailed past the Statue of Liberty and the UN headquarters.
This is a very surreal moment. This whole thing has, the campaign has grown so exponentially. It's taken up so much speed. It's grown so huge that I would not have thought any of this when I had joined the campaign. It's been a great journey and a great growing exercise experience for me as well as we take this campaign forward. So very happy for that.
Inside UN headquarters, the Vanuatu government is busy building support to get the 97 votes it needs from the UN General Assembly members to advance the goal of having the International Court of Justice issue a legal advisory opinion on climate change. Composed of 15 judges, the court, which sits in The Hague, settles legal disputes between countries based on their voluntary participation and also issues legal advice, known as advisory opinions, on matters referred to it by the UN General Assembly. Mr. Prasad joined the campaign run by Pacific Islands Students Fighting Climate Change as a law student in 2019. Building on the work of the original group of 27 students at the University of the South Pacific, who earlier that year devised the plan. He says amid frustration over the slow delivery of the Paris Agreement promises, he found the idea very compelling.
The youth voice in this has been the driving force behind the campaign since it started. It started from a classroom of young people who were very concerned about two things, the human rights aspect of climate change and how it's impacting people's rights everywhere in the world, and then not just the rights of people, but the idea of intergenerational equity, the rights of generations to come, generations unborn. It really is a way to get states to do more, raise ambition, get more accountability and more fairness. This framing is great in strengthening the COP processes, the Paris Agreement, and plugging in the gaps that currently exist in those processes.
The Vanuatu government joined the campaign last September and has agreed to develop and submit the legal question to be possibly examined by the ICJ. The campaign has the support of 1,500 civil society groups across 130 countries. Mr. Prasad says for him, the initiative is about a fight for his survival and his future.
It's not just about human life that we're worried about or we're trying to save. That is all very important, but we also are looking at the existence of Pacific culture, of climate vulnerable countries, cultures, traditions, and really all that we hold dear. And so that is really what we are standing here to lose.
Due to the rising sea levels, a number of villages in Fiji are already in the process of relocation. Fiji officials say the funds pledged by richer nations at the UN climate conferences of the past do not cover the costs of relocation. Only adaptation measures such as seawall construction. Fijian youth leader Lavatanga Lagesiru from the Group Pacific Islands Climate Action Network says residents have already been forced to move. Adaptation measures like seawalls, mangroves and better drainage are no longer enough to save many villages. And there's also the increased frequency and intensity of extreme weather events like Cyclone Winston in 2016, which killed 44 people and also destroyed entire villages.
That single climatic event wiped away almost one-third of our GDP in terms of losses. Students were, out of school for prolonged periods of time. And when they had to go back, they were studying in tents. Some of them were living in these tents. And there were students who, didn't go back to school because their families had to struggle to rebuild their lives, which was sort of an immediate priority.
Mr. Siru says an advisory opinion from the ICJ is the missing piece of the puzzle that'll ensure big emitting countries deliver on pledges from the Paris Agreement. These include emission reduction goals, funding for climate adaptation, and also compensation for the irreversible impacts of climate change so far. Law Professor Margaret Young from the University of Melbourne studies the fields of climate change and environmental law, as well as public international law. She says an advisory opinion from the ICJ is not legally binding, but it would carry a lot of influence and develop legal clarity.
This legal advice can provide a little bit more certainty around some of the principles at play in the Paris Agreement, not just for states to voluntarily nominate how they're going to contribute to climate change, but for states to be told what equity across states and even across generations might look like. So, for example, we have a principle of common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capacities, which means not all states are expected to do the same to mitigate climate change, because not all states cause the problem in the first place, and not all states have the same level of capability to address the problem. We know that that's a principle in the Paris Agreement, as it was in 1992 in the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, but we haven't yet seen that operationalised in concrete terms at a global level.
The former president of Palau, Thomas Remigasau Jr., says that understanding is important when it comes to influencing big-emitting countries such as Australia to do more to limit climate change.
When it comes to climate change impact, it's still not regarded fully as a security matter, a life and death situation. People are addressing it as it comes. But this is where we're saying it's about time that there is a full recognition that climate is in the area of justice, and so therefore requires immediate attention to it.
Climate litigation is another developing area. Nation states are frequently defendants in the cases, many of which take place in the Asia-Pacific region. The volume of cases in this field has more than doubled in the last 7 years, with more than 1,000 new cases launched in the past 6 years alone. Last month, the United Nations Committee found Australia violated the human rights of Torres Strait Islanders by failing to adequately respond to the climate crisis. The non-legally binding ruling recommended the Australian government pay compensation to the 8 Torres Strait Islanders who brought the case in 2019. Mr. Prasad says the legal understanding of international law and climate change is growing, and he expects a potential ICJ advisory opinion would further add to that.
That really strengthens this campaign because we're now getting to see the nexus between climate change and human rights getting more settled in the international space. And so while it will have an impact in all of these areas, what we are really looking at is how an advisory opinion can drive ambition, how an advisory opinion can drive action between states. So it will have far-reaching impacts because it's a clarification tool. The power of an advisory opinion really is in how it's implemented, how it is used by the people after it's given.
With the UN Climate Summit coming up in November in Egypt, the decision on when to hold the UN General Assembly vote to push the issue forward is complex. In 2012, 3 years before the Paris Agreement was adopted in 2015, there was a failed attempt by Palau and the Marshall Islands to gain the votes needed for an ICJ advisory opinion. This time round, Mr. Prasad says things are different.
There's a different framing of the question, a different framing of this advisory opinion. It's about clarifying obligations of states under international law and protecting people's rights from the adverse effects of climate change. So it's a very different frame from the previous attempt. Also, I think the idea that climate change and its impacts is not just affecting Pacific countries or climate-vulnerable countries, but all of us in the world is now becoming more and more apparent. Something that everyone is now coming to terms with, and campaigns like this is now more likely to get support.
The Vanuatu government is still developing the framing for the legal question it will present to the UN General Assembly, which could be made public by the end of October. An opportunity to bring on the vote during the 77th session of the UN General Assembly was shelved to allow time to build more support. And another chance is being sought between now and February. Meanwhile, Youth Pacific Islanders are continuing their grassroots efforts to build the civil society campaign, including out on the streets in New York, as part of Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Future movement. Mr. Siru says the process of building and sailing the Vaka takes time, and he takes inspiration from the Vaka and how it instills patience.
So it's a journey, and we are really appreciative of the many coalitions and the many civil society organizations and governments that are coming on board to make sure that this journey becomes seamless, and then it will also weather through the rough waves or the storms.
With the current policies in place, the world is set to exceed the Paris deal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees or 2 degrees Celsius, and is on track to heat by 2.7 degrees next century, in the year 2100. Biwa Kwan, SBS News.